Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. All right, cool. So we have Shilpa Shah here. She's the alternative delivery model leader at Deloitte. And she's also the Women in Tech, program leader over there as well.
Hi there, Andy. Great to speak with you.
Shilpa, thank you so much. Pleasure to have you on the show. I actually really can't wait to talk to you about this. I know that through our acquaintance, Anna, I already feel like I know you a little bit, I like to think, because she's been so excited to have you on the show. And subsequently, I've read loads and watched loads of videos. So hopefully, I can do some justice. I think the pressure is mainly coming from Anna on this one. So I'll certainly try my hardest.
Brilliant. Anna is a force for change and our mutual passion for all things diversity and inclusion in the tech space have brought us together. So it's great to meet her and great to speak with you.
Absolutely. Before we dive into the bulk of the conversation, would you mind giving the listeners just a little bit of a brief overview of your background and experiences today?
Sure. So I've been in the consulting business for the last 22 years, having started my career off as a software engineer, qualifying from University of Manchester's Institute of Technology back in 1997. And I could already see back then that technology was the way forward. I've spent 15 years working with different clients, helping them through software and data-driven transformations. But most recently, I've taken on the mantle of alternative delivery model leader in our firm, focusing on the growth and setup of new services, be that offshore, nearshore, contractors, and most recently, crowdsourcing, to think about how do we offer a broader and better range of services to complement our existing business to our clients, leveraging the benefits that technology actually brings. And another personal passion is that I've been the leader of the Women in Technology Network here at Deloitte for over 11 years now, trying to create sustainable change for ourselves and our clients and society more broadly to bring better diversity to the world of tech, which I genuinely feel is the most exciting industry in the world.
Hard to disagree, I suppose, with that at this point in time, but just briefly take you back, mentioned that you started out your career as a software engineer and you felt as though you had a pretty good sense of like what the opportunity could be in that space back then. Was it like, with I think some people's perspective of tech, was it the what it potentially could be from an enabling standpoint at that point for you, or was it more so just the actual fulfillment that you were getting from, you know, being an engineer, being able to actually create things?
I think for me, I've always been tech curious. So even at 7 years old, you could find me trying to rip apart the speak and spell for any of the listeners who remember the speak and spell to figure out how it could work. And then my dad having the foresight to buy me a Commodore 64 on which I learned to program, and then seeing the results of typing in this new language and making things happen on the screen really sparked my curiosity. And, you know, I think my parents were great influencers in the subjects I decided to study and the degree I decided to take. And at that point, I don't think we really knew the full potential and power of how technology could impact our day-to-day lives. The internet was only just kind of kicking off, and I remember learning to program in HTML on my industrial placement. So I think it was more about, actually, I can see that this is a great way to create new products. Companies are starting to need new solutions to better engage with people. But it was a learning journey, and, you know, I think having that curiosity, not being kind of quite sure of where it would go, but knowing that it was going to go somewhere, was the thing that really drove me to explore a career in technology and software engineering.
Interesting. Yeah, I think it's a compelling thing. If you, I think back then, if you could grasp like what the potential of is of technology. And I think that like most things, the technology seems to seemingly exist long before. And I think the demand for like the use of it comes along with like the education piece. Did you find, as you've kind of progressed through your career, that you've always felt you've been in that position where you've had to educate people? People are more tech savvy, obviously, for the masses, even within business. But have you always felt the need to sort of educate as you go to kind of promote what the opportunity is of using tech for, you know, all the reasons that, you know, you probably care about?
Absolutely. I think it's been, you know, an interesting journey of having to educate, you know, people that you work with clients, with the next generation who are thinking about entering technology-enabled careers, to the point where actually we've now turned the narrative on its head. So yes, it was a bit of a change to help people understand the potential that technology can bring, but actually it's really about understanding the problems that we need solving and how technology can be an enabler to helping to solve those problems. We didn't know that we needed to be connected to almost everybody on the planet, but Facebook solved that challenge through its creation. We didn't know that we needed to have, and whether it's a need or a want, next day, next hour delivery, you know, from the likes of Amazon, for example. But I think, you know, unmet needs matching with the problems that need to be solved, matching with technology, has really kind of changed the narrative around what technology can actually allow us to solve. And that's something that we have to continually educate everybody, you know, from the teachers who are spending time with the kids and parents. If I think back to my parents back in the day, and still possibly think that, you know, anytime they have a printer issue, I'm the one they need to call. I have palmed that responsibility off onto my 13-year-old daughter now. But, you know, really changing what the understanding is of technology and the career opportunities and the fact that, you know, you could explore so many different things is something that I think we all collectively have a responsibility to do.
I've been told off a couple of times, I suppose, from various tech people that we've had on the podcast before, but I'm one who really, probably because I'm not the most technical person in the world, believes that like tech is more of an enabler as much as anything. And I think innovation has almost become synonymous with technology. But for me, in order for the tech to really be leveraged and utilized, it seems to me that the people, the way that we work, almost needs to be the core of the innovation before you can kind of fully leverage technology. And I think that it's an interesting area, and I know that you're obviously heavily involved with looking at like what the new world of work's going to look like and the alternative ways in which we can actually be productive within a workplace. I don't know why, but for me, relatively speaking, it feels like this level of innovation on how we actually operate has seemed to have been a rather large lag from when the technology was perhaps actually available to be used.
And I think it's been a bit of a journey, but, you know, concepts such as AI have been around for over, you know, half a century. Mm. I think what has changed is just the acceleration and technology platforms that are now available as a result of that acceleration. I agree. I do think that technology is an enabler to solve different problems. And I think we as society are increasingly more aware and concerned with the purpose behind which, you know, we may choose to use technology and the problems that we're trying to solve from it and with it.
Yeah.
So I'm in agreement that tech is an enabler. I think the people aspect, because I think people have been excited by what tech can do. So there has in the past been a focus on more of the solutions. But, you know, we have a saying here at Deloitte, which is fall in love with the problem, not the solution. So I think now there has been a sort of large scale shift to start thinking about, well, these are the global, the societal, the political, the economic challenges that we need to solve, be it, you know, the UN's sustainable development goals, be it challenges that our clients are facing. How can we bring together the best of people and processes, data, all underpinned by technology to create the right solution?
And when we talk about, I mentioned like the new world of work, and what solutions that could potentially offer. It's obviously quite a broad statement, so feel free to kind of hone in on a couple of areas that you're particularly compelled by at the minute. But what will that look like, and what value could we potentially be looking at from this?
I think it's incredibly exciting. I think the challenge is that there are many possible futures. I don't think there's a definitive answer to what does the future of work look like. What we do know is that, you know, various bits of research show us that people are wanting to use these different ways of engaging, be it enabled by technology, to contribute to the world of work. The ONS, for example, says that within the next decade, 50% of workers will either be self-employed or freelancers. Another stat is that 83% of workers won't even apply to an organization that doesn't offer some kind of flexible working role. So I think organizations, you know, have a challenge ahead of them to think about how they best integrate these new ways of working, these new talent models, these new digital platforms and online labor platforms, which allow us to do things like crowdsourcing and tap into the gig economy, how they make that a part of the workforce to solve the problems that they need to solve. I think it's an interesting journey that people are very early on and starting to think about. They need to start defending against the potential disruption that's coming by thinking about it now.
And what I've got a couple of questions actually, so I'm going to try and remember the second bit I was going to ask. But just earlier to your point about the assumptions under, like, that 50% of the workplace will be freelancers or contractors. Specifically in the UK, within the IR35, the new off-payroll legislation that seems to be coming in next year, like, do you think that that's ultimately going to actually deter people enough to affect those assumptions?
So I think there are different types of freelancers and different ways of engaging with the gig economy. I think we do need legislation that protects both freelancers and the organizations that are working for. So there's got to be policy type of protection and regulation that is introduced to make sure that people are being treated fairly and organizations are, you know, benefiting in the right ways, but in fair and ethical ways to maximize the opportunities presented by the fact that we now have 4.1 billion people connected via the internet and growing. Mm. So thinking about, you know, the best ways to engage the right talent to get the right problems solved and the right tasks done and the right work done, has to be underpinned and supported by education, you know, whether that's within an organization and outside, policy, regulation, but in a fair and ethical way. And I think, you know, for example, startups who are starting to think about building this way of working into the core of their businesses need to think about all of those dimensions. So it's not just about the tech, it's about everything else that surrounds it as well, to make this a truly effective way of engaging a global workforce.
And on another point, I think from one of your previous answers, you mentioned like fending against the disruption. I think obviously, I assume you're coming at it from a negative place with what the effects would be of these disruptions. But disruption happens all the time, and sometimes it's for a reason and for positive reasons. So what is it specifically you're talking about when you mentioned that we have to kind of ensure that, you know, disruption doesn't affect what we're specifically talking about?
So I think you're right, Andy. You know, disruption is a force for change and can be positive. I think when I was talking about defending against the upcoming disruption is if organizations don't start to think about how they're going to tap into this new way of working, you know, they could potentially be upended because the world of work is changing, where you're going to access talent from is changing, the digitization of the workforce is changing. So that could have the potential to disrupt an organization that isn't thinking about, you know, how to incorporate this into their future businesses.
Right. Got you. So it's almost like not planning ahead in layman terms.
Correct. Right. Got Absolutely.
You. See, I have to dumb things down for me, sure, but otherwise I don't.
No, that's brilliant, Andy. And, you know, planning ahead, I think, you know, is an underestimated skill because we are so busy in the day to day trying to solve for the challenges that are right in front of us. It is often hard to, for even for business leaders, to give themselves the headspace and time to think 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the line, especially in, you know, the times of disruption and uncertainty in which we currently live. Because if you're going to place some bets, you know, you're going to want to place them in an area where you think you've got a little bit more certainty. But unfortunately, social, political, economic and other challenges mean that we aren't, you know, in a certain environment. So it's not easy. Thankfully, you know, there are organizations like ours and others that help clients think through that.
Do you enjoy the obviously the aspects of consultancy in the sense that I think you tend to get a bit more of a higher level perspective on the marketplace as if you were to work, you know, directly, you know, for a startup or whoever. Is that an aspect of the work that, you know, you think if you weren't to work in that consultancy, it would be, I suppose, more challenging?
For me personally, you know, that is one of my motivations and drivers. So understanding where the market is going and shifting, being able to support our clients on their journeys and, you know, being able to be a real part of their transformation and say, you know, I help them achieve that. That has always been a personal driver for me. And that's the kind of benefit, one of the main benefits, I think, of working in a consulting organization like ours. And, you know, the unprecedented access that you have with to be able to access some fantastically, amazingly talented people who are equally passionate is another reason that I've been in the business that I am for 22 years.
Going into sort of the demands for the way of working, you know, we kind of covered a little bit, but some of the demands that you're seeing, you know, because of this perspective, I suppose, working within a consultancy, what are some of the specific demands? I know you mentioned briefly about, like, you know, crowdsourcing, but is there anything in particular that, you know, you would, I suppose, recommend people to keep their eyes on that you think will be, you know, is really getting ahead of steam?
I think there are a lot of kind of technology trends that people will be familiar with, whether that's blockchain, AI, cyber, robotic process automation, etc., cloud, that, you know, people are already kind of keeping a watchful eye on, know they need to think about for the future of their businesses. I think crowdsourcing is a really exciting opportunity to engage a diverse and broad set of people to do things better and do better things. So, for example, with my, you know, passion for diversity, if I think about people in the crowd who may not be suited for the corporate environment because, for example, they don't interview well. Well, I think, you know, there is a responsibility to help people train, but also to educate companies on the fact that talent can come in many different shapes and sizes. So changing the culture of an organization is something that needs to be a focus when you start working with different talent models and recognizing the skills that people and capabilities that people from all different backgrounds bring. But if you think about, for example, the stay-at-home parent who wants to still contribute, they could, you know, work via an online labor platform to, you know, provide whether it's expert opinion and insight to undertake a task or a piece of work. And I think more and more organizations need to start thinking about how do we integrate this as part of our business. It makes sense. We need the, you know, access to this new and different talent, but it also opens up possibilities of, you know, engaging people who may not traditionally be able to engage in the workforce. When I quoted the stat about 50% of people wanting to work in this way, that will be another reason that people may choose to work in this way. If we think about automation, automation is promising, you know, to provide such great benefits to a large population. And, you know, we're quite positive that, you know, it will actually create more jobs than it will replace. Who is going to be the beneficiaries of that automation? Can we work in different and smarter ways? I mean, I would love to see the 4-day work week personally introduced. because I think that the benefits need to be shared amongst everybody.
Mm.
So I think, you know, whilst there are many possible futures and we've got an exciting journey ahead of us, tapping into the crowdsourcing and online labor platforms and, you know, freelancers and the gig economy who choose to work in this way, who want to work in this way, you know, is an absolute must for businesses who want to stay ahead of the competition.
I mean, a lot of this is driven by the businesses themselves. And I think like most things, we're all kind of we're all dipping our toes in with all these various things and waiting for some of the big players to actually do it and, you know, talk publicly about it. Do you think that that's what it will be a case of when we do start to see major momentum towards alternative ways of working? It's just like, I don't know, one of the big tech giants, for example, or a couple of them all of a sudden start working in different ways. It seems to have that domino effect, certainly from my perspective.
So I think it's really interesting. There are thousands of crowd startup organizations out there now.
Mm.
And I think what successful organizations are starting to do is work with them throughout the early stages to help shape what they think the demand will be from those platforms and startup organizations. I don't necessarily think that we'll have, you know, an organization that is one single player in this space, because there are so many different opportunities to engage with different crowds to do different things, whether that is consumer insight, whether that is breaking down work into tasks and having people complete them, whether that is tapping into crowds of experts and thought leaders in the R&D space. I think we're going to see a proliferation of different ways of working, and then each organization thinking about what are the right crowds that I need to work with that will complement my workforce. If we think about businesses who are wanting to grow to double the size of their business, are they going to double the size of their headcount and the real estate that they occupy, or are they going to get on this journey and start thinking about alternative talent models and alternative workforce as a way of creating that growth?
It's weird, isn't it? I mean, we've literally not really changed the kind of traditional 9-to-5. I mean, I think, wasn't it Henry Ford who created that? The whole concept of 9-to-5. And, you know, that was essentially using humans as a production line. And we still feel like it's not really changed that much. And I think almost with this interesting point of inflection where we are in this kind of multi-screen environment where technology was supposed to be this enabler to make us more efficient. And I think all it's particularly done at this point is make us just busier in general. So I think the demand for a change with that regard, I certainly think it's needed. Certainly, I'm with you on the 4-day work week. I'll certainly make sure that that's a highlight of this show when we publish it.
You know, I think technology has done so many great things. I think, yes, the 9-to-5 model is quite interesting. Though you're right, we don't live in a 9-to-5 environment anymore. Even if you think about education generally, it was designed, you know, over 100 years ago to suit the model where everybody would be potentially working in the sort of factory environment. Things have changed so much, and there has been great progress, but there still is more to do. Technology has enabled a move away from the 9-to-5. And I think, you know, there are a lot of organizations who have introduced great deals of flexibility and understand that we no longer operate in that way. Maybe it needs, you know, further input from governments and other legislators around the world. But I think there are some great things. It's just about how do we help get that message out there more broadly, that the positive aspects of technology, because you're right, it has also helped us to be more busy. We have this instant demand, instant gratification requirement now. So I think, you know, some of the winners will be those who are actually supporting the talent that they work with, you know, mental health challenges and working in more agile ways. And I think, you know, that whole piece needs to be very much part and parcel of how we see the future of working.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's certainly an interesting one. I think it plays into the hands of, I suppose, some cultural demands that I think I feel we're very strongly about in one sense, but also I do, and this is, I suppose, a question with the last remarks as well, we're expecting so much now from companies to provide retreats, mental health, like the whole kind of package of life seems to be being wrapped up entirely in via the business. And I don't know why it doesn't seem to settle quite as well with me, that this whole kind of idea of everything being kind of synchronized through work, because the whole nature was that you go to work, you do your bit to provide for a separate life almost. So I don't know, it's just an interesting observation that I think I was talking about with someone the other day. So what's your kind of take on that as just a general concept around the direction that we perhaps are moving towards?
Yeah, I think the lines between work and life have definitely blurred. And I think, you know, on the whole, personally, quite positive around the agility that technology has afforded. You know, as a working mum, it is important to me to be able to spend time with my children. You know, technology does mean that I'm able to work in an agile way to make it to, you know, the school plays and spend time with them when I need to and want to, and then, you know, switch back on when I need to. I think there is some personal responsibility that we do need to take as well in terms of managing our boundaries. And I think, you know, there is a responsibility within organizations to provide that support. So there are probably lots of great and interesting innovations and ideas that companies are starting to put into place, because, you know, mental health is a big challenge globally. So that we make sure that technology continues to provide, you know, positive benefits. I think I read somewhere that, you know, in the next 20, 30 years, 50% of our NHS budget could be focused and on mental health related challenges. So, as I said, you know, organizations who start building this into their very DNA are the ones who are going to be those that people want to work for, customers want to buy from. Mm-hmm. And I think it's incumbent on everybody, you know, to at least acknowledge that this could become a big challenge and work together to try and solve it. You know, we could create a crowd around it. How about that?
Well, I think we'll try. And do you think that these motivations have come from the demand for talent as well? I mean, I don't mean to like necessarily say that businesses don't all have like some greater like social purpose, but at the end of the day, we're the commercial entities, right? Their bottom line is to make money. So do you think that the demands and the reason why, are you an optimist and you think that ultimately like people care about people, or is there an element there that like, especially within tech, there's such a demand that we have to now reconsider our offering, and that ultimately will start at the cultural offering level as well?
I think, you know, I'm an optimist in that I do believe in, you know, the greater good and the power of people working together. Culture is the biggest thing that is difficult to change, but also something that, you know, is a must as organizations transform and think about, you know, their futures. Focusing on culture, focusing on the people. Who knows? The tech will be writing itself. Should we be carrying on teaching people to code? We'll still need people who are able to understand the self-written code that AI and other forms of technology will be creating in the very near future. So I think organizations who focus on their people, focus on the cultural transformation, focus on making their workforce inclusive, understanding the needs and the challenges, how to help their people reskill and retrain as the world of work changes, are going to be the winners in the future.
Yeah, totally. Well, I totally agree with that. I think that'll be the nice part is when we are at that point where automation really does take over, because I think it ultimately allow us as people to do what we're really good at, which I think is think on a high level and think deeply about problems. I think that's what we're good at. You know, when computers are really good at doing monotonous things over and over again, we're probably not quite as good at that, I would imagine. So I think the sooner we can get to that point, and exactly to your, you know, to what you allude to, if we have an environment that's conducive to that, and people are then able to optimally think things through on a deeper level, that's where the success is going to come from. And you know, you might not need to be in an environment 60, 70 hours a week, because how is that ever going to be conducive to depth of thought and, you know, gaining perspective that's ultimately going to be important as well?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the next generation of workforce are, you know, very focused, as well as, you know, the fact that we have now five generations of workforce coexisting. You know, we do hear a lot that the next generation are very focused on organizations that have a purpose and want to work in a more agile way, and are expecting employers to provide that level of support and infrastructure support, mental health support, personal support, as well as wanting to continue to develop their skills. I think, you know, the culture of curiosity, lifelong learning, those all have to be part of the core kind of values for an organization that wants to be successful in the future.
So last bit as well before we get going, I did want to cover this more, but I think we just got carried away, as expected, of course, was around the women in tech work that you've been involved in. Just wanted to ask really about how the kind of the passion for that actually started, and obviously what you're up to now, and I suppose the last bit would just be how people can get involved with this mission.
So I know, you know, it's no secret that we still don't have great gender diversity in technology. From a personal perspective, about 11 or 12 years ago, one of our analysts who just started in the world of work, you know, was found herself to be the only female on her project at that time, and wanted to connect with others. So initially, we got a group of about 50 women together who worked in our technology consulting business, as was then. And it was a great conversation. But actually, you know, we quickly realized that this is a challenge not just for us, but also for our clients, and not just to this particular group within technology consulting, but more across, you know, the whole business and society more generally. So I created the purpose for the network with themes around attraction, development and retention, and have now grown it to over 1,100 members across Deloitte, and helping our clients to think about how do they create their own women in technology related communities, really also helping to amplify all the amazing initiatives that are out there on the cause, whether that is things like the Women in Science and Engineering People Like Me training, whether that's the fantastic event coming up at the Emirates Stadium that we've sponsored for the last 7 years called Your Future, Your Ambition, to encourage more females and also those from diverse backgrounds, and anybody who's interested and tech curious, to consider a career in a STEM related field, as well as supporting our own people through retention and development initiatives. And I'm really proud of the amazing work that we do as a firm in really shifting the dial on respect, diversity and inclusion, and how we're sharing that with our clients too. Because, you know, I think lots of individual organizations are making an impact, but just imagine joining forces together, what a great impact we could have. And I mentioned my daughters at the, you know, as part of our conversation. They are a personal motivation for me as well, because I would like the world of work to be different, and we shouldn't hopefully need to be talking about any form of diversity or inclusivity by the time they come to work, because, you know, we all work in an environment where everybody is accepted for who they are. There are no sort of biases or challenges based on gender, race, ethnicity, sexuality, disability, or any other form of diversity, because we recognize that diversity really does bring the best outcomes for businesses. So if I do my job right, a women in tech network should not need to exist in the next 10 years.
Awesome. But for those that do want to get involved now to make sure that you are obsolete in 10 years, where is it that they would go to perhaps get involved, learn more? Is there a website, etc., that they can visit?
So absolutely, from a Deloitte Women in Tech perspective, you can find our details on our website at www.deloitte.co.uk and find details of how to contact us there. There are a great number of initiatives, and I'm sure, you know, for people who are listening who are already working at organizations, I would encourage them to get involved with their own networks. And if they don't have one or they don't have initiatives in this space, please do reach out and, you know, we can help guide you in the right direction, because I do genuinely believe that collectively we can make a big difference.
Awesome. Shilpa, thank you so much for taking the time. Pleasure catching up with you.
You too, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturers Voice Slack group. See you next time.